I cannot tell you how much I missed everybody. We're back, The Chirp with Darren Millard, for Season 2, Episode 1, and it's Rick Tocchet. He's been a player, he's been a coach, and now he's a broadcaster with Turner and TNT, opening week for the new national broadcaster of the NHL, and we're going to ask Rick why he didn't tell Wayne Gretzky that he was auditioning to be one of his panelists. And how that's all going to work with the great one. They have an awesome relationship that goes back a number of years. Why Tampa, Toronto, and the Vegas Golden Knights could win the Stanley Cup, and what stands in their way? Connor McDavid, is he on the same level of Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux? Rick Tocchet has all the answers. It's Season 2, Episode 1 of The Chirp with Darren Millard.
Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
You guys are sensitive over there.
That's a disgrace! That's a disgrace! What a joke!
We're going kind of back to our roots. This is the weird part about this. I don't know whether anybody knows this. Rick may not remember, but the first incarnation of this podcast was recorded with Season 1, Episode 1, in a hallway in Buffalo with Rick Tocchet when you were coaching the Arizona Coyotes. And we had one of the coolest conversations for me anyway. And I knew that it was good because the PR person just left and said goodbye. And then I don't know how you found your way back to the hotel, but it was fun. So this is fun to revisit with you. How are you?
Good. Yeah, really good. I'm in your same city as you, right? but yeah, it's been a good transition. Starting to, it's a little different now, Darren, that not getting ready for training camp. You have to get ready in a different way, more on your side, the media side, but a little different. Usually you're in the fired. I actually was talking to Craig Berube and Travis Green. I talked to them quite a bit, and they got their sleeves rolled up, and they're right into it. You know, opening season's coming up.
So when you have those conversations, are you yearning? Do you feel like you're missing out a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, Chief asked me, he asked me a question on something, and then Travis Green were talking a system thing. But it keeps my mind going. They think I'm doing them a favor. They're doing me a favor by involving me and asking my opinion. But yeah, I do miss it for sure. The strategizing, the meshing personalities together, the pressure of winning, all that stuff. We all enjoy it. You know, as much as it is a stressful job. There is a fire there, and you're addicted to that stuff because it's trying to build something and to win. And hopefully down the road, who knows, get back into it.
Yeah, I wasn't going to do any research for this, and I felt like I was probably missing out on something. So I did just a little peruse through things. You played with a lot of guys who went on to coach, and you went on to coach. It's kind of strange, but I was going through the list, and it's extensive.
Yeah. I always felt like whether you're in a restaurant or a bar or just sitting around, you know, conversations go everywhere. You know, y'all don't always talk about sports and hockey, but it always comes down to, you know, strategizing with hockey and the players I've played with, right? You just talk about, it's just the easy conversation for me. And I love it. You know, so people say, do you always talk hockey? And my girlfriend gets mad at me sometimes. Yeah, sometimes I do talk too much hockey. But a lot of those guys, you learn from, and a lot of those guys are head coaches, like you just met, Travis Green and Craig Berube are one of them. You go down the list of guys that, Mike Sullivan played with him. He's a great coach. So
Rod Brind'Amour.
Right. Yes, Roddy Brind'Amour, coach of the year last year. So an extensive list of guys that are very good coaches and were good hockey players.
Did you like your coaches when you played?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I had a little bit of everybody. There's a couple of guys I didn't like, but a lot of guys I did like, and they helped my career. I mean, obviously Mike Keenan really helped my career. I don't know if he could coach the tactics he did then now, but he was he got the most out of me. Scotty Bowman, amazing bench coach, just a tactician, really good, managing the game. You get guys like Jim Schoenfeld and guys like that were father figure type of guys I really enjoyed. Craig Ramsey was a very nice gentleman when I was near the end of my career in Philadelphia, that when we went to these conference finals, he was a real nice guy. You get the real nice gentleman, then you get the guys that, they coach different ways. So you got to coach different nowadays. It's a different game. The players want to know why, right?
Yeah.
They want relation, and you got to touch each guy. You can't just, the old days, some of the coaches, you wouldn't talk to a coach for 3 weeks. I don't think you can do that nowadays. I don't care if you're fourth liner or you're the star player. I think you have to communicate with your coach almost daily sometimes.
Is coaching more like parenting now, where you got to have that constant connection and affirmation and be guiding?
I would say it's a partnership. So whatever relationship there is, it's a partnership. If you think you're going to coach as a dictator nowadays, no chance. So you have to be a partner with the player. You know, he has needs that you have to help. Unless he wants that piece of the pie, but he also has to realize it's a team game. And what the coach is trying to do, it's about the team. So you got to try to, you know, I don't know if it's a gap, but kind of wedge that together and try to find that common ground, because each player is different.
When did you first do TV? Because you've done a little bit before.
The Flyers, pre and post. The year they went to the final, the year they went to the finals was a really fun time. You know, we did the pre and post, the intermission stuff. We did on site at the rink, and, you know, thousands of people behind you. You know, it was almost like that ESPN game day.
Yeah.
But probably not as good a production. I mean, the people behind you, this headset was not that great. Couldn't hear, but it was fun. I had a little taste of it.
Did you like it then, or was it just something to fill time?
I think then it was something to fill time and, you know, see if I liked it. Now I'm taking it real serious. I really want to be good at this. I think TNT's really, all eyes are on them. They want to bring a different perspective on how they translate to the audience. And they just don't want to, a hockey show. They already told me that. If you're coming in as a hockey show, you know, we don't want you. They want entertainment that covers hockey. And I think that's really the key.
So will you be the first one to beat Gretz?
To beat Gretz?
Yeah.
Well, Gretz is funny because he told them after I got hired, and I didn't tell him I went to test because I didn't want him to make calls and stuff. And he called me after because I heard you did really well. And they said that they're going to offer you a contract. But he told them he was really extremely happy because he knows I'll argue with him. Like he knows, you know, Wayne has his posse around where they all laugh at his jokes. He knows if his joke's not funny, I'll tell him. So that'll be funny. We'll disagree. I'm not going to force to disagree, but we do disagree on some things.
I thought it was interesting. It looks like the two of you are on opposite sides of the set.
They did that on purpose. They did that. They're really smart about that because they don't want, you know, Danson Carter is more the veteran. He's been with NBC for a lot of years. So, you know, when you're in the middle, you know, and you know, you've been on TV before and stuff, you know, you keep turning. They just want me and Wayne I turn this way and then he turns that way. And that's all we have to worry about. So they're trying to do it for the comfortability for me and Wayne.
Yeah, the hardest position is when you're in that middle and you're the tennis judge and you're going back and forth. It's like, where am I looking? When did you first meet Wayne and really get to know him?
So obviously played against him in the 85-87 playoffs, the finals. And then after the 87, I didn't really know him after the finals. You know, just obviously play against him. And Mike Keenan, when I got invited to the training camp of Canada Cup, rooming with Wayne. So genius by him because you know, I was a young, trying to become a leader. And so I roomed with Wayne for about the first 10 days. Awesome. And that's when he started secretly dating Janet Jones at the time. And he told me, he goes, don't tell anybody. You know, we're in Canada. We're in Montreal. Training camps are for a month. So I didn't say a word. And then finally the story broke, I think, by the fifth day. And I remember saying, hey, it wasn't me. And he goes, no. He knew, but she used to come to our room a lot. Janet was always around. But for about 5 days there, when they were in Canada, they kept it secret. And then finally the news broke.
Dude, you were like the inside. Like,
I was the insider.
Janet's coming and going. Wayner's there. Like it's.
No way today that stays 5 days. It might stay 5 minutes with the social media and stuff. No chance that would have been the secret. But 5 days, it was a secret. Yeah.
So now you guys are pretty tight. Like it's kind of cool the way it's all coming around.
Yeah, I've had a great relationship over the years, Wayne. Like, you know, it's been, you know, since 87. So 30, you know, we're having to do the math, 20 some years. He's just a terrific guy. It's hard to explain him because he's so engaging. He's a funny guy. People that don't, you know, you see the camera on him, maybe people won't see who really is. Behind the scenes stuff is the stuff that I marvel. You know, he obviously does charity work and people know that, but under radar stuff. I the stuff I've seen him do for a lot of different people helping out is amazing. And so that's the part I love him. Very generous guy. Always thinking about other people, but enjoys life. You know, he likes to golf. He travels, you know, now he's pumped about this. I was a little nervous when I first like to figure out Wayne's just going to just to do it. But he's called me a million times, say, hey, we got to do this, we got to do that. And he's been talking to the NBC producers, that, hey, maybe we should do this. So he's really wants to be creative and how to approach this whole thing.
Yeah, so that's great to hear. Yeah. Do you think he feels some pressure because of what he's doing?
Great question, because yeah. I remember we were having a few drinks there the night before.
You can say beers. I have beers.
Yeah, I don't know if he had – no, but he'll have a beer every once in a while. I think he drinks wine. But anyways, yeah. Wayne is the type of guy that, you know, I told him, don't try – like, for him, like, we don't want to put the pressure always on Wayne. Like, Anson Carter always, hey, Wayne, what do you think? And I double up, and then Biz is going to be there where everything, it's going to be pressure on him. There's going to be some stuff that, you know, controversial stuff and stuff, and I think we got to take a share of that and help him out. It just can't be Wayne all the time, put the pressure on him to make sure he has, you know, says the right thing all the time. It's not fair. We got to help him out, like being teammates.
You played with Wayne, you played with Mario, you played with Eric, you played with Cam. I think all in a row. Like, I'm not sure if that's the order. But what's it like being a star player, superstar player, almost 500 goals yourself, and then playing with those guys?
Yeah, they're especially Wayne and Mario. They always ask me about them, and yeah, you know, they just want to be one of the guys in the dressing room. They're the same as us. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when they hit the ice, they're a different planet. They're always the same. Like, you know, whether they score three goals or they lose a game, they're very good at resetting. You know, the next day, you know, so it's hard for players, you know, they have a big night the next night, you know, they have a tough time playing the same way because they're so high from the night before or vice versa. They're so down because they had a bad night. And all the pressure on those guys is screwed at those guys get every game for them to be that way is I marvel. And if you look at their line mates over Wayne and Mario, it's not like they've always had superstar guys around them. You know, they know how to make a good hockey player work with them, you know, just, you know, Wayne and they're both the same, you know, they wanted North South players. They, you know, they didn't want East West guys, you know, maybe one guy on the line was more of a, you know, a fancy guy, but they always wanted that one guy that's just going to drive the net or give and go or you know, take people with them and stay in front of the net because they knew that was better for their game. You know, instead of having, you know, the circus, you know, the river hockey type of guys.
Is Connor in their league?
Well, for pure entertainment, the way he plays the game, the way people game plan him, absolutely. Now, you know, it's you know, all not to put pressure on Connor. Now he's got to deliver, obviously, in the postseason. And I don't necessarily blame him for that. But, you know, the league's going to be better if we can get Connor McDavid past the first round. You know, like we want to see him. And I think that's where – you know, Mario, it took Mario, what, 6, 7, 8 years to break that bubble too. So you have to put him in there in a sense, just the pure speed, his rushes are incredible. I mean, when he winds up, I haven't seen a player to that stature with the way he, you know, remember Gilbert Perreault back in the day, almost like a Gilbert Perreault, where he used to come back, take and go through everybody. Connor McDavid does the same thing. So you probably have to put him in that. Now the postseason now is the next level.
I want to put your analyst hat on here. I'm going to throw three teams at you, Toronto, Tampa, and Vegas. Tell me why they could win and why what could hold them back. One thing on either side. And let's start with Tampa.
So Tampa Bay, it's funny because I've talked to John Cooper this summer a couple of times. Great guy. The pressure on them is to be the third team, the first team in the cap era to win three in a row. That would be, what's the last team? The Islanders, right? So to me, the pressure on them is how does Coop bring fresh ideas, new ideas? Because, you know, and that's his big thing. So I think that's the key for them. Is there something they can do different as a team to kind of re-energize the team? Because it's hard, man. You play all those games and it's the same thing and it's a long road and there's a lot of bumps and bruises. What they did is done is amazing. So for me, is can they integrate the new young players? You know, the Gaudreau left, Blake Coleman left. Like that third line is gone. So to me, it's the young guys. Can they take that piece of the pie with the Kucherovs and Stan? Like, you know, they're loaded, Vasilevsky and Hedman. Can those guys come in? So I think that's the challenge for them.
Why do you think they can win then?
Oh, just because those four or five guys named, right? Those guys are just under pressure to what they've delivered. And obviously, Coops and that staff's a great coaching staff. They know how to motivate their players. So talent on paper, they still have it. It's just a matter of that hunger, which it seems like they do have, to be able to go through that whole thing again, that ride to win the Stanley Cup.
I think we all agree Steven Stamkos is a future Hall of Famer. I want to point out that the second most goals he ever scored in a single season was under you. So just throwing that out there. What was he like early on?
Well, so my first year when I took over for Barry Morrow was, he's the first pick, right? So there's a lot of pressure on him. He wasn't playing a lot. And I remember Gary Roberts was on our team. And, you know, Gary's at the end of his career, but he was a great, like, he was almost an extension of the coach staff. And I was talking to Robs one day, and he goes, Stammer's got to get stronger. I said, what do you think about playing him three out of every five games or, four of every six games? Don't play him every night. And Robs told me, yeah, let me work with him. So what we did was, say he played Thursday and Saturday, and we had a Tuesday game. Well, we didn't play him Tuesday. We'd hold him up for 4 days, and he would train with Robs, and you get stronger and stronger. And he actually had a great last 6 weeks, 2 months of the season. And I think that was the stepping stone or the foundation for the next year. He got bigger, stronger legs. And then he was great for me.
Like load management before load management was a thing.
Yeah. And but he's an 18-year-old kid. So yeah. my thing is, like, and I know he's the first pick, and that's with the pressure. And I think you can't be scared to take a little bit away from that to one step back to go two steps forward. And yeah, you're right. The load management probably was back then. I didn't know what I was doing. Me and Rob just kind of threw it at the wall, but it worked out.
Vegas, why can they win and what do they have to overcome?
Well, I think they've been in a lot of pressure games over the last 4 or 5 years. They've been there, obviously regular season and playoffs. So really impressed what they've done. Are they better than last year? That's my question. I'm not sure if they're better than last year. It's the start of this year. So that might be something we have to look at. Everybody talks about the center position. Can you win without a really dynamic centerman? Like, who's this, I think you can. Ronald Leonard, he's got to take the ball now. There's no flurry at him. I think Leonard's a great goalie, but it's on him now. I think they still, I love their coaching staff too. Same thing. So to win, yeah, I think they can win because they've had the pedigree over the last four or five years. That where they've won a lot of hockey games.
Chandler Stephenson, you mentioned the coaching staff or the center ice position. Like he makes those other two guys so much better that I think it makes up for that dynamic center that isn't there.
Well, they got him for a fourth round pick. And I remember sitting in Arizona, you go, fourth round pick, and we need centerman. Why can't we get him? But great move by Vegas get him. I thought, I know every time we played Vegas, I mean, he did something, whether an assist or a goal against us. He's a guy that can he get to that next level? I don't know him as a person. Can he train harder? Can he do this or that to get to the next level? I don't know him. But when I see him on the ice, he makes some hell of a plays out there. Can he get to the next level? That's really what it comes down to now. He's not a surprise, put it that way.
He reminds me of a short track speed skater, the way he's always going around and around and around the ice. Toronto. Why can they win and what do they have to overcome?
Well, I think they got some, they got some of the best players in the league in the world right now on their team. You got one of the best, him and Ovechkin are the best shooters and goal scorers in the league. And Austin 5-on-5 is the best. Marner, he's a point getter. He gets, 80, 90 points every year. Guys like Morgan Riley, Nylander is a guy that, had a good year last year. So they got some high-end guys. To me, it's the supporting cast. I remember when I was in Pittsburgh with Crosby and Malcolm, who were their Hall of Famers, are unbelievable players. But I remember the Nick Beninos and the Johnny Cullens. I mean, not Johnny, Matt Cullen. And you had Patrick Hornquist. Those guys took a lot of that leadership role, and they contributed on the ice. Does Toronto have enough in the supporting role to help those guys when there's pressure hits and say, you know, Marner hasn't scored in two games and the press is on him, can somebody pick it up? That's really what it comes down to, is alleviating that pressure. There's a ton of pressure on Toronto this year. Do we have other guys that can alleviate that pressure?
Yeah, it sounds like Dubas has gone out of his way to put pressure on himself, as opposed to taking it off the, or having it on the team. Do you see that?
Yeah, I that's a great point. I think him and even Sheldon Keefe a little bit, put an onus on them. It's pretty, that's leadership to me. You know, they're going to put it, they're going to point the fingers at themselves, maybe help the players out by taking a little pressure off them. So yeah, I've heard that, some of the press conference about that, taking that pressure off.
But in Arizona, that's where you were. You guys were so close a couple of years ago. Does it break your heart to see the rebuild there?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I got there, you know, the ownership changes, and there was a lot of noise around that team. And the biggest thing when I got there, and I remember Jim Rutherford told me, he goes, you know, he said, "You sure you want to go there?" And I said, "There's other opportunities." And I said, "No, I want that challenge." And what I was most proud about, you know, we built after our first year, second year, we started being a tough team to play against. We might have rushed the rebuild a little bit too early, you know, when we acquired a couple of guys. If we could have maybe stayed that path, hindsight's 2020. But yeah, we were a competitive team there. And obviously, things have gone a different way now. New ownership, new management. And now they've, you know, obviously, when you have cap space, yeah, you have good players, and you want to rebuild, you know, with, you know, Bill Armstrong, you got rid of all the good players and they had a ton of cap space. So they acquired a bunch of draft picks. Now the work begins. You know, how do you create a culture with, you know, you got a ton of draft picks? The work starts now. You know, they better hit on their draft picks and they better hit on some of the culture stuff that they're going to do there. Because how the fans have there been 20 something years, they've been patient enough and they want a winner.
Yeah. You were there. You'd like the Kachina jerseys coming back. You wore that.
Well, I'll tell you what, that we had good teams back then.
Yeah.
You know, we were just, like I said, we were one or two players away, and, you know, we just, same thing, you know, we just didn't acquire that wire, you know, the money to do it. I think that's why I got so much respect for the Ed Snyders and the Jeffrey Vinnicks and Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, a lot of these owners that they just, you know, they're not really, you know, obviously they want to make money. I get it, but they want to win. And that's the biggest thing. You can just feel it. And the players in the room can feel that. They're willing to do anything to win and go get that player. That's why I got so much, like that, what Vinnick's done in Tampa, you know, single-handedly, obviously Eisenman going there really helped, and they hit on their draft picks, but he went in and settled everything down. And you know, it's one of the best franchises in the league.
You know, not only because of the streak, but you were with Phil in Pittsburgh. You were with Phil in Arizona, acquiring that one player. I don't know whether he's bound to play in Arizona or not this year, but during rebuild, it makes sense that he would move on. Like, that to me is a player that somebody could add to play a little bit down in your lineup and just be a producer.
Yeah. I listen, Phil's not going to be there. We all know that. You know, it's already been basically made that, you know, not saying they don't want him, but Phil doesn't want to be there. It's just a mutual thing. You know, Phil's got to move on. You know, Phil's got to get healthy, get himself ready, and whoever picks him up, they're going to get a guy. If you got a really good hockey team and you got a good, really good leadership group, Phil can go in there and he can score that goal and make that play to make it a 3-2 hockey. And those guys are hard to find. You know, it's a 2-2 game, 6 minutes left. Who can go out there and make that play? And Phil's that guy. You know, he might not do something all game. You just don't notice him. But just give him that one chance, he can be the difference maker for one of these teams that want to get over the hump.
Has anybody reached out to you since you got the TNT job, the Turner job, that you were surprised to hear from? Because your phone must have been blowing up pretty good when word broke.
It's funny, a lot of texts from, like, even GMs, like, "Hey, congratulations, take it easy on me," and things like that. But players, you know, a lot of players have called, or mostly texts, you know, it's because nobody phone talks on the phone anymore.
No.
But, yeah, you know, like the other day, the first preseason game, I got a text from Chris Letang. It was looking good out there, or looking good in there. So, but yeah, you get a lot of these different texts, especially on the air. But I'm anxious to start. I'm not sure, but I think Charles Barkley might be on the opening show. It might be a secret or not. I don't know, but I hope he's on our opening night show. I hope he puts we want to put the goalie equipment on. That's what I love to see, put him a goalie equipment.
Have you ever played goal? Like, did you, in all your years, did you ever do that?
One time. I lost 10-3. Precious Blood. It was a league they had back in Scarborough. And I remember one day, and I was a forward, you know, one of the better forwards out there. And I said, I think my brother coached him. I said, let me play net. I want to play net. He goes, okay, go net. And we lost 10-3 last time. Never played goalie again. Ever.
Are you going to pick your own suit and tie and pocket square, or are you going to let somebody else do it?
No, I don't have any fashion. I'm not like you. I don't have any like fashion coordinators and stuff. It's all me, you know. I got the, I think I bought a couple different suits, but yeah, I rotate the shirts and the ties, yeah. You know. Keith Jones told me just keep your tie straight and you should be fine.
Do you have your own dressing room?
We have a dressing room. It's a great big dressing room. And Charles Barkley, you got Shaquille O'Neal, you got Pedro Martinez, you got Wayne Gretzky, then you got Paul Bissonnette. And, so there's a bunch of locker rooms. It's a big room. It's a big locker. So it's a, you got to remember, you got the MLB talent there, and then you got the basketball guys. So it's an eclectic group in there.
You know, I give them credit for that, and not one person's dressing room, but everybody gets sort of goes in like you were playing hockey again. That's pretty cool. Team building wise.
That's the philosophy of TNT. I got to tell you, and I'm not just saying, listen, like the ink's dry on my contract, so I don't have to really say this, but TNT has been unbelievable. The way they, they have their production meetings and there's a big team in there. There's and everybody, it reminds me of a team, and they want everybody to be comfortable. And, so I was really impressed. So you're right. That locker room atmosphere or setup is their philosophy.
When's the buzzer going to go on Bissonnette dropping some kind of language?
He told me he's got to struggle because, he goes from Barstool to this. So.
I know.
But Tim Kiley, the producer, is phenomenal producer. He does the NBA guys award-winning show. He said to me, he goes, it might blurt out, but just keep talking. We'll figure it out from there. So Biz, kind of calm Biz down a little bit.
So you have Tim's doing both?
Yeah, he's going to do both until I think they're hiring some other guys, some hockey people. So it's kind of right now, but he's taking the charge. And I'll tell you what, he's really helped me out. And, you're in there, you're a little bit nervous, way to do it. And he kind of settled me down right away.
So what did he say to you? I'm curious.
Well, he doesn't want me to look at the camera. He wants you to be conversational. Just perfect. Speak, he doesn't want you looking at the camera and having your 30 seconds. He just wants everybody to talk and just casually, if you're talking about, we're talking about Washington Capitals and Wayne's talking about Ovechkin. Don't be afraid to jump in and say, Backstrom's not playing. Who do you think will play? They just want everybody kind of chiming in. It doesn't have to be structured. So structured. It's almost like a bar atmosphere. You're sitting in the bar talking to your buddies.
Are you going to be active on Instagram? Do you have Twitter? I can't remember what you
have. I have
Twitter.
Both. Yeah. I might have to start. I mean, I'm usually not. Yeah. But every once in a while, I'll say something on Twitter. But yeah, I got to be careful. I remember Twitter first started, remember? And, you get some guy, you get the Twitter trolls after you. And I DM some guys like a couple of times.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Like, hey, some guys were saying some stuff. And I said, hey, listen, I'll be here at this time, man. Meet me. Let's go. Like, you got something to say in my face. And at the time, I think it was my son. He's going, Dad, you can't do that. And that was years ago. And I don't do that anymore. Trust me. But you just got to ignore the guys, the Twitter trolls, it's part of the whole thing.
That reminds me of the Sean Avery story when you were coaching Tampa. And didn't you tell him, I'll be out back?
Well, yeah, I think you were asking me about I don't chirp players on the ice. Like, I try not. I don't think I've maybe once or twice in my life, but as a coach, as a player, absolutely. And he was hitting Stamkos from behind. He was doing all these things. And we didn't really have a tough team at the time. And I remember he came by our bench. And somebody looked at me and I said, hey, I said, I can't do anything with you. I don't have a skates on. But I have a suit on. When you put your suit on, meet me by the bus. And I don't know if he even heard me, but he was like, MF and me, whatever. And I said, and I remember John Tortorella, who I know Torres very well. And usually when you trip the other players in your team, the other coach doesn't like that, but he didn't say a word. He just stayed straight. But yeah, I was pissed. I said, meet me by the bus, put your suit on, let's go. But that was probably the only time I've ever chirped a player.
Buddy, that conversation where you told me that story was 3 years ago. That's impressive that you remembered exactly where I was going with that. That's a steel trap that you've got. Do you talk to a coach every couple of days? It sounds like you know everybody in the league, but
You know, some guys not, you know, not that much, but for sure, Craig Ruby and Travis Green quite a bit, at least once, twice a week for sure. They're good friends of mine. And like I said, you know, we pick each other's brains on, you know, without, even when I was coaching against them, it's not like I'm telling them what's going on, but they're very cool when it comes to like including me and, hey, what do you think here and there? It keeps, like I said before, it keeps my mind going.
Can you give Coop advice in the sense of he's going to coach the Olympic team? You were on Canada Cup team, same type of situation. Like young guys, old guys, I know it's different eras, but hockey's hockey.
Well, you got 60 minutes, right? And there's one piece of the pie. And the one thing that I remember the Canada Cup in 87 is, you know, when you got Dougie Gilmore and Daryl Hawerchuk, the great Daryl Hawerchuk, and Michel Goulet and all these guys playing anywhere from 8 to 12 minutes. And some nights they play a bit more, but they knew for us to win, they'd have to take a lesser role. And look who scores on the, you know, look who does the Howard Chucks on there in the last, you know, last minute to win, you know, Brent Sutter, you know, scoring a big goal for us. Paul Coffey. I thought Paul Coffey played one of his best hockey ever. He was incredible. He played 30 minutes a night. That's the one guy that, you know, you have some of the good defensemen, Ray Bourque and all those guys. They didn't play as much sometimes because Paul was, you know, was unbelievable. So I think to me that the advice is you got to get to the players early and they have to take a piece of that pie, you know, that they might have to play a fourth line role tonight and they might only play 9 minutes because, you know, Connor McDavid's going tonight and we got to play him, you know? So there's a lot of that part of it. And I think those guys, when you play for your jersey, will accept those roles.
You never played in the minors. Ever.
I got lucky. Yeah. I think when I went to the Flyers, like Bobby Clark and Bill Barber and all those guys, Rick McLeish, were all retiring. And we just, you know, a rebuild of Peter Zezel, myself, Derek Smith. And yeah, we didn't play in the minors. You know, a lot of guys chirp me. They call me Silverstone because I never played in the minors, right? So, but I got lucky. Yeah. If I go another organization, maybe I would have. But then, you know, there was about 7 jobs open when those guys retired.
I know you got to go, and I appreciate your time. But before we go, who got the better of the Rick Tocchet, Anson Carter trade?
Well, you got to remember, so it was me, Otsi, Ranford, the old guys going to Washington, Allison, and so they got the young guys. So, yeah, he was chirping me on the thing.
Was he?
Oh, he was chirping me a little bit because he was telling me the story how he found out. I think Allison had called him and said, it was on the Washington news or something. Hey, there's a blockbuster trade, but they didn't know the players, right? You know, Washington back then. And I guess Allison called Anson Carter. Hey, you know, there's a big blockbuster. Who is it? And then I guess AC or one of those guys said, we're in it. I guess they finally found out. But yeah, we talked about that because, he was actually, when he went to Boston, he was really excited because they had a lot of young players and it's a different market there than Washington. And then we went there. It was a short cup of coffee for me. And OT obviously stayed there, but for me and Ranford, we kind of left after.
You are unbelievable as a hockey player, as a coach, and now as a broadcaster, because done a little bit of work with you back in the day with the Kipper and Sportsnet. And I can't wish anybody more luck and best wishes than you. I'm really excited for you, pal.
No, I appreciate that. And I'll be picking your brain because you're a pro. I watch the Vegas Knights telecast. You guys do a great job. And should be a hell of a year for you guys. For you, it's fun to cover a team that has a chance to win. That's the best for guys in the media. And, whether I don't care if you're a radio guy or a TV guy, when you have a good team to follow or to broadcast to, it makes it a lot of fun, you know. And, that's something that translates well when you watch.
I was thinking about it last year. They win 3 out of every 4 games. It's tough not to really enjoy your job when you do that. Subscribe, hit the like button, or Rick Tocchet's going to DM you. That's what's going to happen on the Chirp podcast with Darren Millard.
I did it, though. I will tell you, I did that a couple of times. Appreciate it.
Love hanging out with that guy. Just to give you an idea, like a little behind the scenes, we'll pull back the curtain a little bit on Rick Tocchet. He's a Scarborough guy, just outside of Toronto. And I didn't know Rick when he played as well. But we have a mutual friend. One of my great friends is one of his great friends. But this person actually went to school, middle school and high school, with Rick Tocchet. And Tocchet went on to Canada Cups and Stanley Cups and coaching in the National Hockey League, now a star in the media. Rick is like so tight with those guys that he went to school with. And not just like one guy, but he's tight with a bunch of them. And I think that's so cool that you can be the superhero and still be a normal dude with the guys that you rode your bikes to school with. Now, I'm not sure Rick did the bike thing, but I think that's awesome. That gives me so much even more respect for Rick, because there's a few people like Bob Bender, the producer of this podcast, like he rinsed all his childhood friends when he became a superstar.
You're assuming I had childhood friends though.
good. When they said you don't hang out with the guys that you went to high school with anymore, I thought it was because you rinsed them, but it was just because you didn't have any buddies.
That's correct.
I misunderstood that completely. That was fun though. So here's some bold predictions for you, Bobby. This year's Vezina Trophy winner. I've been thinking about this. This year's Vezina Trophy winner will not be Andrei Vasilevskiy. Will not be a return to the podium for Marc-Andre Fleury, but will be Mike Smith, approaching 40, of the Edmonton Oilers. And Mike Smith will also be on Team Canada's Olympic squad. He was there in 2014. He will return to Team Canada going over to Beijing. Mike Smith is going to be a big part of what Edmonton does, and he's going to carry, he's got a 2-year contract. I know it's out there. You guys are like rolling your eyes. Just bear with me on this. He's going to be great. Connor McDavid. It sounds like an Oiler thing here, but it's really not. Connor McDavid. They just happen to have two really good players, three or four. But McDavid, goes back to the Gretzky era. McDavid is going to have more points this year than anybody else. That's a no-brainer. We realize that. He's going to win the Hart Trophy, his league MVP. But McDavid will also have more assists than the runner-up for the Art Ross has points. So put it another way, McDavid will win the points race based on assists alone. Hasn't happened since Gretzky. It was close last year and it didn't happen. But just let that marinate for a couple of minutes. LA in the Pacific Division is going to be the breakout team in the National Hockey League. They're going to straight into the playoffs. I've watched some of their kids over the course of the preseason. I really like what Todd McClellan and Rob Lake and Luke Robitaille have done there. I think they're poised for the kids to finally hit their stride and go. Seattle, folks, they're even money to make the playoffs. I think it's a bit of a sucker bet. Based on what Vegas did, everybody thinks that it's just going to happen again with Seattle. Even in the weak Pacific, I don't think Seattle makes the playoffs. I think Vegas was the one-off, not just even getting the final, blah, 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 but being so competitive. Vegas really hit stride by capturing the energy of T-Mobile Arena early on, and they rode that. Seattle doesn't play at home until game 8, I believe. It's going to be a challenge to get going and get some momentum, and Vegas snowballed during that first year. I don't see the same thing happening. They might make a good run at it, but just because what Vegas did in expansion doesn't mean that Seattle's going to follow suit. Penguins, last one for you. Penguins, I have one rule. I don't have a lot of things that I faithfully follow in line on. I like trying to allow myself some flexibility here. I never bet against Sidney Crosby. I never, even if I'm not putting money down, I just don't go against Sidney Crosby. I will take the Pittsburgh Penguins to make the playoffs. And it's like a decade and a half. It's continued to go. And I think they're gonna tweak their roster a little bit. TNT, Charles Barkley. Was that a tease or what? Do you think Tocchet meant to let that slip out a little bit that Charles Barkley's going to join them on opening night for TNT on Wednesday? Or was that just one of those perfectly well-placed teases to make everybody sleep? That's why you listen to the Chirp podcast. You now will tune in Wednesday night for TNT's opening broadcast, the doubleheader, Rangers and the Capitals and the Chicago Blackhawks and the Colorado Avalanche. and see whether or not Charles Barkley walks onto the set and does his thing. If they put the goal equipment on him, first of all, they're going to have to get Ben Bishop's gear and maybe even like let the seams out on that. But that would be cool, watching Wayne and talk and the group take shots over at Charles Barkley. But that's must-see TV. I'm so excited for those guys. Been part of a national network launch before. And there's nerves, you're buzzing, you don't know really what to expect, how this is going to go, from producers all the way down. Everybody's got the nerves, and then the light goes on and it happens. And I think, I'm not just saying this because he was on the show, but with all due respect to the all-time points leader in Wayne and Biz, who's got the great podcast over at Barstool, they do the great job. And AC, who's the veteran in the TV department, I think Rick Tocchet is going to be the star of that show because he's top 10 in penalty minutes. He's got almost 500 goals. He's coached in the league. He's played a power role. He can fight. Like he's done everything in the game. He's the only one that's on that panel that's done everything. He might be the only one in our game in media that's done everything and could do everything. And I think he's going to have a voice. And as you heard, he's not shy about voicing his opinion. You Twitter trolls, stay away from him. He will come over to your house. No, he won't. But if you are watching on YouTube, we appreciate it. What do you think of the new set? It's a work in progress, but I think we've got it down pat because we spent the entire time since the Olympics working on this thing. So send us a rating, send us some feedback, give us a like, subscribe, all that stuff, wherever you get your podcast, whether it's on audio or YouTube. For producer Bob Bender and all his buddies who are in the room with me right now, thanks for listening. The Chirp Podcast with Aaron Millard.